you. I want everyone else to stick around. I'm going to talk to Eve Engler in the second half, and here we'll treat you in between to All About Love by the Four Fathers. Thanks a lot, Andy.
Thanks so much, Chris.
Till the next time.
You try to make it all about the money.
Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, as a Canadian, I'd like to say my country at least is doing its utmost to stay the terrible hand of its friends and allies supporting and waging wars against the civilians of Gaza, Lebanon, Yemen, and elsewhere. But that would be untrue, just as it is a lie when the Canadian Minister of Foreign Affairs, Melanie Joly, says that is the case. Sadly, Canada is up to its pointed elbows in war profiteering and the real politic of hard power in the aforementioned benighted locales. And in other places too. None perhaps know more about that than Canadian journalist, author, and activist Eve Engler. Eve's written a baker's dozen of books about Canada and the perfidy of its foreign policy. His latest, co-authored with Owen Schock, is the recently released Canada's Long Fight Against Democracy, described as a, quote, sweeping overview of Canadian-backed coups since 1950, documenting Canada's contribution to the ouster of over 20 elected governments from Mohamed Mossadegh in Iran to Patrice Lumumba in Congo, Salvador Allende in Chile to Jean-Bertrand Aristide in Haiti. Welcome back to the program, Eve.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's always my pleasure. You know that. Well, Eve, we've talked about your disruptions with the great, if not good, on past shows. You recently intercepted France's president, I'll use scare quotes for that word, Emmanuel Macron, to remind of his country's immiseration of its former Haitian colony. Can you remind our listeners, Eve, of the reparations demanded and paid by that country to France?
Yeah, after winning their independence through a violent struggle against the most barbaric of enslavement economies in the Caribbean, the Haitians, over a 13-year period between 1791 and 1804, they declared independence. 2 decades later, when there was less warfare in Europe and the French government was in a stronger position, they sent many naval vessels to Haiti to basically intimidate the government into paying a debt of independence. And that debt, which was really a ransom, of course, if anyone should have been paying, it should have been the French government paying the former enslaved. But it took 122 years to pay off that debt. The New York Times recently, a year plus ago, said it calculated around $40 billion in today's money. And so when Macron was here after meeting with Trudeau in Montreal here, last week, he actually was going to meet with Legault, the premier of Quebec, basically a block and a half away or so at a museum. And so he was going to walk it. And I think he was trying to show there was a bunch of his supporters from French people here in Montreal that came down, and he was going to show that he has support in Montreal, this kind of thing. Anyways, we found out about it last minute, and a half dozen of us went down, and I basically challenged him on when France is going to repay this ransom. And he heard me. He clearly heard me. He gave a kind of funny look where he processed what I was saying and was like, no, we're not going to pay that $40 billion back. And I think it's a huge injustice. You know, the Haitians have a good claim also again on reparations for enslavement. But the claim on the ransom of independence is even stronger, where it really was. It was, forced out of this country, newly independent, weak country, on threat of invasion. And it was, tied into the Haitian sector of the Haitian elite that wanted to be able to trade internationally, right? So that's part of why they conceded, is because they were being isolated by France and the other European U.S. Powers of the day. And so they were partly conceding to this what they understood as, unjust debt at the time. That was obviously understood. But they wanted to be able to participate in global economic affairs. And it was, horribly devastating for Haitian development. And so, I was trying to raise the question. It's something that I think that is huge in the history of injustices. It's a fairly substantive one that doesn't get enough attention.
Well, and as you rightly mentioned, the France had been at war, the Napoleonic Wars had just ended, so they were building up their forces once again. But all the revolutionary government of France and all the people that had been trying to bring it down, and all the fighting that had been going on between the European countries and America too, they could all agree on one thing, that the only successful slave revolution in history, that in Haiti, should be opposed by everybody, and that they should be isolated and made to repay this blood money.
Yeah, it's obviously speak to how, the Haitian Revolution was one of the most greatest examples of liberation in the history of humanity. And the idea that after this incredibly bloody, devastating, about half of all people, Africans, were killed in Saint-Domingue, pre-Haiti, over 13 years, and the idea that then they would have to pay for it. But it was because the Haitian Revolution had such massive geopolitical, it was so far ahead of its time in terms of pushing equality, and it was so threatening to the racial slavery system that was incredibly profitable. And so, yeah, the idea that the Haitians, who won their independence through force, were then forced to pay the property owners, mm-hmm. the slave owners, for lost property, which is what, it's just beyond belief. And then it also ties into, the U.S. took over. If they find the final payments are paid to U.S. banks, because the U.S. took over the debt when they occupied Haiti in 1915, and so then the final payments are essentially to U.S. banks, and a little bit of complicity there, and also even the Canadian government, Canadian government a bit later, but where they participate, Canadians participate in trying to re-enslave Haitians during the Haitian Revolution, and support British gunboat diplomacy in Haiti in the late 1800s, which was very much tied into the indebtedness of Haiti, which was, of course, centrally about they were paying so much money to France every year. And so Canada, gunboats from Halifax, 1870s, were sent down to pressure the Haitian government at the time. Canada even has a role. And I've never seen any time where the Canadian government, I searched a little bit for this, where the Canadian government's called on France to repay this odious ransom that they forced upon Haiti. I couldn't find any instance, even though there was a very good action that was organized by some activists here in Montreal back 12, 13 years ago, where they did a fake, like a yes man style thing. They did a fake saying that France had agreed after the terrible earthquake of 2010, that France had agreed to repay the ransom, and they got the French government to have to deny that they paid, and it got a fair bit of media attention, and it sparked a lot of hope. And then they public letter from all kinds of intellectuals and left figures in France and around the world calling for France to repay. But anyways, even within that time, no Canadian official that I've ever seen came out saying, hey, yes, this is a legitimate demand. And instead, what we have is, as Macron and Trudeau were doing at that meeting, they talk about Haiti and how they're going to help Haiti. And they announce, like, we're going to give some money, and it's all, they control where the money goes. And it's really, they call it aid, but it's really about, you know, further controlling Haiti. And that's what we get instead of a modicum of justice.
Yeah, where are the yes men now? That's terrific. I remember that. I was looking on the, I saw that your video of the intervention that you shot stepping in, or the disruption stepping into Macron's pleasant stroll in Montreal. Below it in the comments, somebody was saying, well, there's been plenty of time since all of that stuff, and lots of other countries have built their economy. So don't you go crying to me, Haiti. I'm paraphrasing. But this is the attitude that, that was a one-off thing. Like, history, began after that, and Haiti should have been able to, by all this time, bring itself up to world standards of living and so on.
Well, in 2004, one of the reasons why France overthrew the Aristide government was because the Aristide government did the calculation of what was owed from the ransom of independence and instigated a legal case, which I don't know enough about the law, but according to the lawyers who were doing it, had a fair bit of possibility of getting a good ruling and putting further pressure on Paris to repay. And then the coup government just threw that out the window. The ransom of independence is not only is there obviously, you know, the impact Haitian affairs in so many ways for, you know, so long, but even 20 years ago, the government demanding that repayment is part of what instigated a new imperial assault against the country. Obviously, that wasn't the only reason, but for the 2004 coup, but that was a contributing factor. So yeah, it's absurd. Now, the intervention, I was taken aback. I have this TikTok account, which I have posted 20 things to over the past 2 years or something like that, a few other kind of political interventions. And I basically considered, it of not much use because it seemed like the TikTok algorithm had sort of suppressed Palestine stuff and no one was really looking at it. So, but I posted my intervention with Macron to the TikTok, as I did to my Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. And it was at like 5.5 million people have watched it on TikTok. So I presume from that is that, first of all, the TikTok algorithm doesn't consider Haiti, France particularly sensitive. And then also I presume from that is that the Haitian community, probably in the U.S., but maybe also in Haiti, are, I guess they're fairly into TikTok. I know that at one point the Haitian community, Montreal at least, was very, Facebook was their social media of choice. And so the intervention with Macron kind of went viral on TikTok, and millions and millions of people have watched it. So I was very happy about that. And I think part of that is also that there's just this whole anti, obviously, with the Republican, attack against Haitian migrants in Ohio. And
this is the dogs and cats and
eating pets story that the Donald Trump and Vance have decided that is some ticket to whipping up anti-immigrant, anti-Haitian, anti-black kind of mobilizing anyway. So they're that the debt of independence is sort of, and it pushes back against some of the anti-Haitian kind of rhetoric out there, which, as you mentioned, some right winger who posted on my intervention kind of stating that, is that I've seen some of these right-wing forces in the U.S. that have been pushing this Haitians eat our pets kind of storyline, that they have gone into kind of like responding to the left analysis of Haiti by saying, oh, that debt of independence was, that was 100 or 80 years ago that it was all finished off. Why are they still talking about that? And anyway, so I think from a Haitian community in the U.S. that feels kind of besieged, having this sort of putting this issue back on the table and seeing the French president kind of challenged on it, I think that, it kind of ends up in a little bit of that kind of conversation or political context. So obviously that was, I was happy that that's, you know, got wide circulation. And I think we're far from forcing the French government's hand on the repayment. But, you know, it's certainly important to push the issue where there's opportunities.
Yeah, well, and ironically enough, Macron himself is now running a coup government by some measure, according to some. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Eve Angler. Eve's written a dozen and more books on Canada and its perfidious foreign policy. The latest is Canada's Long Fight Against Democracy. You can find his essays, numerous, over at his website, eveangler.com. That's Y-V-E-S, angler.com, not Yvette Angler, as the spell check on at least my Twitter turns it into. Well, Eve, I was watching that video on Twitter of you talking or posing a question to Monsieur Macron, and immediately the Secret Service and his, you know, bodyguards and everything were beaming towards you, and what I took to be a quite threatening posture. You've been roughed up in the past in your other disruptions, and I can't remember now. Remind me, it was just recently that I think it was the RCMP or somebody roughed you up pretty good, or was it the organizers of some event that you were disrupting? Do you know what I'm talking about, or does this happen every time?
Actually, funnily enough, that's actually the same venue where Macron and Trudeau were meeting. That was where security guard was quite aggressive when I challenged Heather Reisman on her funding of the CEO of Indigo, on her funding of the Hesek Foundation, supporting non-Israelis joining the Israeli military to brutalize Palestinians. But no, the security operation here was at a whole other magnitude. It was actually pretty intense. The first thing is, when I get there, obviously all these RCMP agents, they all recognize me. There was dozens and dozens of them all around outside the venue. Far at that point, very far, I think. I don't know where they were, Macron and Trudeau were, but I'm pretty sure they were, you know, effectively a couple blocks away in the far other end of this Montreal port facility. I had one of the weirder experience with the police in this instance, because there was a whole bunch of undercovers, and I had this one undercover who I ended up milling about for like an hour and a half, and the one undercover who basically followed me for the whole time, or big chunk of the time. Finally, you know, eventually you clue in. It takes a while to figure out what's going on, but I go up to him about 5 minutes, 10 minutes before Macron finally comes out, and I say, "Are you a police officer?" And he says, "No," and he gives his whole story, and so then he goes, he claims he just wants to take a photo of Macron, and then when Macron comes out, he takes a photo, and then he basically like drives me, physically pushes me a block away, all the while he's still claiming like he's just a regular citizen, and he shows me taking a photo of Macron, and he's saying, yeah, basically he's just driving me away because I'm causing trouble, right? It gets to the point where there's these Montreal police that are like a block away, and I say to them, well, if you're a simple citizen, stop touching me. You don't have the right to touch me. And I ask the cops to intervene with this undercover to have him stop. You know, essentially assaulting me, which of course the Montreal police didn't do. I probably realized that he was an undercover, but they had all these different undercovers and all these, one of them, anyway, all kinds of different scenarios. But later on, a member of the security detail of Macron, somebody who had a very clear French accent, unlike these other guys who were probably RCMP and they're Canadian, I was a block away from Macron. And he tried to get me arrested, and he was saying, "I embêté Macron. You're bothering him," as if like a block away, I don't have the right to quote unquote bother the president of a country. It was huge security. But I ultimately didn't get arrested, and they compared to how they have been. It wasn't particularly eventful in terms of the repressive element to it.
Well, it seems a lot of effort just to get a Gallic shrug from the president and a wave of the hand. But, I mean, as you say, it goes viral, and it reveals these people for the emperors without clothing that they are. And with the Reitman disruption, that you mentioned. Did you file charges for assault or anything like that? Or is there any, have you ever done that after the fact?
I haven't. We looked at it in a few instances. I got really, I got pretty seriously beat at when I interrupted Hillel Nour at a Montreal synagogue, and I called him an anti-Palestinian bigot. And the security there, and actually the Rabbi Pupko, who's on the CIJA Quebec Council, Center for Israel and Jewish for Quebec Council, he assaulted me, like he punched me very hard in the stomach, and he told the security to take me outside and kick him in the head. And they took my phone and they wiped the video from the phone. Fortunately, I was able to get the video back, though it turned off. It caught the first assault. I mean, didn't get it clearly, but you can hear it and essentially not exactly see it, but essentially see it. But then it turned off in the latter part of the abuse. Didn't. And we lawyer sent a letter calling on them to not touch any of their video, which almost certain they would have had video of the assault. But we ultimately didn't pursue the matter. It's just a question of resources and time and energy and stuff like that. So my kind of personal philosophy on these things is I always take a totally defensive. I never I don't in any way push back or punch or any, which in some cases would be sort of legitimate. I sort of assume it as I you take the beatings, you take the punishment for the political aim, and whether maybe in some instances it's worth kind of pushing back on some of the that I don't know, but I've mostly chosen to just continue on and continue doing these actions and not worry too much about I got my glasses broken, and that when at the Hillel Nour thing they smashed my glasses and stuff like that.
Well, and then I guess part of that too is that the impunity is a huge part of not only what we see in Canada, but also obviously on the other side of the water. As far as the Reisman thing goes, now Indigo Kills Kids, you've got a story. Should we subsidize billionaires helping Israeli military up at your site? And true to form, the Canadian courts are quick to defend these organizers, despite the fact that their scoff laws, they're going around the tax laws of this country. Do you want to talk about Indigo Kills Kids and what happened in that instance?
Well, Indigo Kills Kids, a activist website. We don't know exactly who is behind it. Obviously, those who did it know who it is, but I don't know. But they put up this site to raise awareness of Heather Reisman and Jerry Schwartz, billionaire power couple, owner of Indigo's financing of the Hesek Foundation, $200 million to support lone soldiers, which are non-Israelis who support who join the Israeli military. And
another infraction of Canadian law, incidentally.
And so there's a double infraction here. So it's a registered charity. So CRA rules state pretty explicitly, like the wording is, I don't have it exactly in front of me, but it's not charitable to support another country's military. And so a violation of the Income Tax Act, they should never gotten their status as a charity, but they certainly should have it revoked. And a recent decision on the Nieman Foundation, the CRA's revocation of Nieman Foundation, says that the CRA considers lone soldiers, supporting lone soldiers, to be supporting the Israeli military. So we are very much hoping that the CRA will finally act on the Hesek. But also, a little bit less clear-cut, legally speaking, the Foreign Enlistment Act says it's contrary to Canadian law to induce Canadians to join a foreign military. And the Hesek Foundation, it's not focused on Canada, but essentially, what you're doing is you're giving principally, other forms of support as well, but principally free education to a Torontonian or Montrealer who joins the Israeli military. And of course, we hear about a lot with the U.S. that, one of the ways the U.S. military recruits Canadian, to I think a lesser extent you hear about at least, is by offering free education, right? And so that's essentially what Hesek is doing. It's a unique dynamic where you have a military, you have mandatory military service in Israel. So that process of offering these inducements is, you know, you don't really need to do that for Israelis, unlike in Canada or the US, where you don't have mandatory military. But what they're doing is to bring people almost entirely, but maybe not entirely, but principally, you know, Jews from France or the US or Canada to join the Israeli military. And so there's a good case. There's also a case to be made that Hesek and Heder Reisman is violating the Foreign Enlistment Act. And so Reisman was able to get a court to, on a copyright infringement or trademark infringement, to force all the telecommunication companies to take down the Indigo Kills Kids website because it was using the logo of Indigo Company. So here you have this.
Yeah, well, it was using the lettering and coloring scheme that is familiar with Indigo's own advertising.
Yeah. So here they've given $200 million, and the public would have paid at least half of that, possibly as much as 90%, but at least like half of that $200 million to the Hesek to support Israelis, you know, non-Israelis joining Israeli military, and in clear violation of the Income Tax Act and in possible violation of the Foreign Enlistment Act, far, far bigger, like, you know, criminal activity than, you know, messing with or using the color scheme of the Indigo logo that this, you know, small activist website did. But anyways, Indigo was able to get a judge to force this down, to take the site down. And this was in the lead up to the September 25th, last week, demonstrations, 50, ended up with 50 Indigos across the country to call for a boycott of Indigo and also to call on the CRA to revoke the charitable status of the Hesek Foundation. And I think we've had some positive development recently on this, the charity question, Hesek specifically, but the broader question of all these charities. Obviously the Jewish National Fund and the Nieman Foundation had their charitable status revoked about 6 weeks ago. Also a couple days ago, the CRA suspended the charitable status of this group called the Eminem Fund, and it also supports the Israeli military. And basically it was taking over what the Nieman Foundation was doing. And it's a very good sign that the CRA acted very quickly. They usually take way too long on these charities, and they suspended the charitable status. So basically they can't offer tax receipts to donors. And so essentially it's an extension of the revocation of the Nieman Foundation. We're starting to get even some break-in into the corporate media. There's a pretty good CBC story, online story about the Hesek Foundation and how much their subsidy they're getting, and a few others in corporate outlets over the past few weeks tied to these two different demonstrations, days of actions that have happened in September. And even to the point where the National Post editorial board, big long editorial complaining about the campaign against Indigo, includes a paragraph that says something to the effect of, and the activists even want to strip the Hesek Foundation of its charitable status, as two other Jewish organizations had their charitable status revoked recently. So they're even starting to like push back against us at the editorial board at the.
Oh, those dirty activists. And you've got another piece up on pro-Israel charities in scare quotes, flout tax laws with seeming impunity. It's this wealth transfer that could as well be just money laundering. I mean, really, as far as the Canada Revenue Agency knows about it, they're not looking into it. Eve, we talked too much about Haiti. We don't have enough time left to talk about anything else, but thanks again for your courage and your stamina and keeping up the pressure and being a constant irritant to both the state and those that would do evil around the world.
Thanks.
And I want to also thank Andy Worthington and get you to go over to Andy's site, andyworthington.co.uk or .uk.co. I always get those spun around, but Andy Worthington at any rate. Thanks again, Eve.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, and for our beautiful children all around the world, most of them suffering. Love for the love for the chemical violence keeping us alive.
try to make it all about, all about the money. But it's all about love.